I'm Jackie Vetrano from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
And I'm Logan Bishop from Belmont University. You're listening to Higher Ed Social, part of the Connect EDU network.
Dad time is the best. Except when it's not.
It has been a good dad day, but we're over at my sister's and the kids are running around with their cousins, so we're good.
So we're on location.
Room, yep, and we're all set.
That's awesome. Yeah, my door's closed because Simon has been a little uppity today. He's my 5-year-old, and it's been raining for about 4 days straight, and he's been wanting to go outside to the new pergola fire pit patio thing. He calls it his campsite, and it's just the patio. But he's really wanted to go out there, and every like hour he goes up to the window and is like, "It stopped raining," and I was like, "Simon, like you can see the raindrops hitting like the puddles out there." He's like, "Okay, we'll look later," and then he'll come back an hour later. "Is it done raining yet?" "No, it's still raining, Simon. It's gonna be raining for another 5 days probably." So yeah, we're like about to flood here. It's actually making me nervous. Last time it rained like this was like 2010, and like the city flooded. Wow. So getting a little nervous about the amount of rain we're getting. So
yeah, it's crazy. Remind me where you're located again, Logan.
Oh, I'm in Nashville at Belmont University. Right. Yeah.
Yep.
You're over where it's a little drier.
A little drier, but a little colder.
But yeah. You got really great ski slopes.
Oh yeah, it's been a great ski season. There's been way more snow this season than we've had the past probably 4 or 5 years. So very, very good for the local economy. And it's fun and it's nice here because like I grew up in Toronto and, you know, obviously extremely cold there and lots of snow, but it's just like gray and around the Great Lakes and it's just windy and icy and gross all winter. But here there's a huge storm and then the sun actually comes out and melts the snow on the roads and keeps it all up in the mountains where it should be. And it's quite pleasant winters here.
Yeah, Jackie is from Buffalo, which is like across the something or other. Yeah,
I appreciate the hesitation. Like you were waiting for me.
I was
to
waiting
jump
for
in.
Jackie to jump in and talk about lake effect snow.
Yeah, Buffalo is like southern Canada, so I'm also like almost from Toronto.
So Jackie, I grew up as a Buffalo Sabres fan, which I was beat up at school for because like being a Canadian.
Oh, I would say you weren't a Canadian.
Yeah, but we'd drive over to Buffalo for at least 8 to 10 Sabres games per season, and
that's so fun.
We're diehard fans, so many many nights spent in Buffalo and pre-gaming at the Pearl Street Eatery.
Yes,
excellent Buffalo wings.
Yeah, all about it. So, have you been to Anchor Bar and Duff's, the true Buffalo wing spots?
I don't know that I ever have, actually.
Downtown, it's a thing. There's a big fight in Buffalo between Duff's Wings and Anchor Bar Wings. Duff's claims to be the original wing. Anchor Bar claims to be the original wing, but then Duff's has, like, their sauces and stuff. It's a big thing. Right. But that is so funny. Yeah, being down here in North Carolina, the Sabres played the Carolina Hurricanes Carolina, and I went to the game, and there were probably as many Buffalo fans as Hurricanes fans, which was actually hilarious. So
it's crazy how well Sabres fans travel, like all over the place. It's cool.
Oh yeah, well we all hated the snow and the cold, so we left.
Yep.
Too fun. So what are your other sports teams then? Are you not a Buffalo Bills fan?
I
guess you're not really a football fan if you're from Canada.
Right. Like CFL is kind of like quirky and fun. Like that massive end zone and field goal posts at the front of the end zone are just like weird novelty and fun to watch. But no, I'd say if I have any NFL allegiances now, but like I grew up a Bills fan, but that was like I was a young kid during those back-to-back like heartbreaking Super Bowl losses of the Jim Kelly era.
So
I think
sad.
that broke just too much to be a diehard fan. So now I follow the NFL here and there, but it's actually usually like BYU alums that I'm following.
Oh, okay.
I work at BYU, so Taysom Hill with New Orleans Saints this year was actually pretty fun to watch.
Oh, I did
But
not know he was a BYU alum.
yeah, he there is a pretty incredible feature from Bleacher Report this year. Like he played what eight different positions like really well this season, and as a primarily a quarterback, like it was pretty crazy to watch him just totally adapt to a utility player type role. So that was fun. So NFL, yeah, I don't know that I have a true allegiance, but definitely a Toronto Blue Jays fan. Grew up during the back-to-back World Series championships there, and then basketball, I'm split between the Toronto Raptors and the Utah Jazz here, because the Jazz are
Wow.
the only, well, there's the Jazz and there's Real Salt Lake and the MLS, but those are your only professional sports teams in the state of Utah. So yeah,
Wow.
that pretty
I
much
did
does.
not know that.
Yeah.
That's a little like trivia fact that I'm gonna have to try to like stump my dad with. He always
Right.
stumps me with ridiculous like sports trivia. So that's a good one I'm gonna have to hold on to.
Well, it's interesting looking at sports in general in the West and in some of these areas. Like you look at Idaho and Montana, where there's nothing like for pro sports, right? When University of Montana has like a FBS football program that they're or FCS, and they're pretty good in the FCS year after year, but they sell out like a massive stadium every single home game. And they're in the middle of nowhere in Missoula, Montana, but it's really literally the only show in town. Like there's nothing else. So people drive for hours to come to watch this FCS football. So yeah, it's crazy to see the difference in sports out here in the West versus a much more compact sports offering in the East.
That's so interesting. I don't think I am dedicated enough to any sports team that I would drive like on a
Right.
regular basis that many hours.
Yeah.
But I'm also not really that into sports. I'm just there for the company. And as a Bills fan, I joke that we watch football so we can have an excuse to drink more, but
Sure.
too funny. We all know that Logan doesn't follow sports unless it's Belmont basketball.
Got
He hasn't even chimed in. It's fine,
it.
Logan. But anyway, so we should let you introduce yourself because we haven't done that yet. So
Wow, I've been
why don't you go ahead and
talking
introduce
to
yourself?
I've been talking, except my thing was on mute and I didn't realize it.
Oh,
So I was wondering
well,
why
we got
Jackie
to the
was like,
conversation.
why hasn't Logan been talking? And I'm like, I've been talking.
Well, normally when we talk about sports, you don't talk, so it didn't feel that weird to me.
Yeah, I was talking. I was about to say how I didn't even know that there was a CFL, and I did not know that the end zones were different and the goalposts were different. See, these are things I did not know. So I've learned something today. I've also learned that I should look at the meter to see if there is talking coming from my microphone,
There you go.
which apparently there was not. So there you go.
We're all learning things.
We have learned so many things, and now listeners get to learn about you, John. So why don't you introduce yourself? See that
Cool.
transition I just did? Bam,
That
bam.
was an excellent transition. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
So yeah, John McBride. I work at BYU as a media relations and social media manager. That position has kind of evolved since I started 6 years ago, and doing much more social media now than traditional media relations. But it's a fun role to have and a fun background to have, especially with the emergence of influencer marketing and influencer relations. We feel like our office at BYU is pretty well prepared for that trend because of, and I know that a lot of higher ed offices are set up differently, but But for us, with our PR and media relations and social all being in the same office, I know some schools, media relations, something totally different and totally different office. But for us, being used to work with journalists and pitching journalists a lot, being able to pitch influencers, it was kind of the natural next step. So our office is focused on that sort of stuff. But yeah, I've been there for 6 years. I was at Weber State University in Ogden, Utah for a couple of years before my stint at BYU. But yeah, enjoying it there a lot. In case you don't know much about BYU, 33,000 students, which is a pretty big and one of the larger private religious universities in the United States. And yeah, we're doing some fun things at BYU and trying to just spread the digital influence as much as we can.
I didn't realize that you were in like an evolving position at BYU, John. You act like you've been there the whole time. I mean, you have been there the whole time, but like that this was what you were doing the whole time.
Oh, I've got a little kid in the room.
Uh-oh.
You want to say hi? Uh-oh, your cousin's going to keep you upstairs. Say hi.
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 And now Lily's leaving.
Bye.
Yeah, it was
bye.
So great to have you on the show.
Right, cameo from 3-year-old Lily.
We get it all the time.
So yeah, it's an evolving position, and I've actually really enjoyed that about our office in general, is that we have a boss who is very pro-evolution and things evolving in a productive way in our office. Whenever someone leaves, it's never a straight, okay, let's just put that person's job description back on the hiring website and hire, you know, one for one that same position. It's always, okay, you know, what can we do better? What do we need to focus on? Mm-hmm. So the person's spot, who left before I came in, basically in the interview, like it was a straight media relations position. And I said in the interview, you know, I don't have a ton of media relations experience. I have a little bit here and there, but what I can bring is more of a social and digital perspective to media relations. And I talked about how, you know, that's where the industry is going anyways. And I guess I was able to sell them on that pretty well. And so started pretty quickly kind of pivoting a bit more towards social and digital at that point. And it really has been an evolution since then. Like social wasn't really in that job description, but it's just grown and grown and grown since that time. And we're actually hiring another position right now. We're bringing someone in who's going to be 100%, you know, writing releases and features for us to pitch. That'll be a 100% media relations position. And I'm, I guess, up to 80-90% social now. So yeah, it's definitely evolved.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah,
I know how that feels. I went through that kind of stuff.
Right.
Yeah, and the fact that you, like, I don't know, I haven't heard too many folks that approach social media as a pitching angle first.
Yeah.
I think it was more like, oh, this is the shiny thing, and we have to get the shiny thing, and we'll figure it out later.
Yeah, and definitely we have our shiny moments, and we realize that social can't be 100%. You know, it's not a 100% newsroom for us, right? Like that's part of it, is that, and that was part of the evolution, was, okay, we're spending all this time pitching the New York Times and Washington Post to get this research out there, and that's great, and we're getting placements here and there, but then all of a sudden our contacts are being fired left and right from every single, you know, journalist position, and we're having a harder and harder time with that, where the tools for us to be our own entity in our own newsroom were becoming better and better, and we're getting a research video out on Facebook that's getting 5 million views and reaching people in a way we've never been able to reach them before. So we've had enough moments like that where we've realized, you know, let's pivot a little bit here and shift a little of our focus to try to spread that reach in a bit of a new way. But yeah, the pitching side of it, I think, started with a few influencer wins. In my second year at BYU, I ended up pitching Beyonce's publicist on something. And yeah, Beyonce posted something about a BYU student out to her 63 million Facebook followers. And like that was a huge win and like never replicable again, but that got the wheels turning a little bit. But then from there, we shifted a lot more to a more micro influencer stuff and a street team model. And obviously, Logan, you're doing incredible stuff with your Boulevard team, as I saw
Thanks.
at High Ed Web. So yeah, our street team model, and I guess, that's what's interesting looking at what you're doing, Logan, and what we're doing is it's not the heavy pitch, like, here, journalist A, come to our campus and film this and put it in a tidy package. But it shifted to a pitch to a normal student saying, hey, we've got this really important campaign coming up. Let's partner on this. Let's have you help us, get this out to your audiences who, aren't consumers of a major media conglomerate, but who are very valuable audiences that are their peers, that are current students and prospective students. And pitching for that sort of influence, I think, has been really fun and really rewarding.
I can see, and I understand. It's good when they actually, join you in
Right.
celebrating things that should be celebrated. And, I think we've got some things coming up later this year. We plan to do more outreach that way, through getting students to help spread the word,
Yeah.
and help tell the story of Belmont and the great stuff that happens. So yeah, I mean, it's exciting, it's fun, and it's rewarding because they're actually learning a little something too, which is always a good thing. It's like they
Sure.
pay us to do that.
Right.
So
We probably owe it to them to, help them learn a thing or two, considering the amount that they're paying us to do that.
that's right. That's how I try to see it. So,
Yeah.
how many, John, I know you're working with students. How many are you working with?
Yeah, so we so, so our model is set up a little differently in the street team. We have about a 25 to 30 person street team at any given time. None of them are paid or actual employees of our office. Those are all opt-in volunteer positions, and they're not so much content creating as they are more of a they're our most valuable focus group in the world, that's for sure. Like our meetings with them are just fascinating to hear their perspectives. But
Aren't
really
they?
as an ampli yeah. But as an amplification model as well, just being able to help amplify our messages and get behind key institutional messages, that's huge. So we've got 25 to 30 on that street team, and then we've got I've got two full-time or full-time student positions, 20 hours a week, two social media students who work with me kind of day in and day out, and they're invaluable. They're doing incredible work, and one of them, her job has completely turned into 20 hours a week of setting up, training, and evaluating just our Instagram story takeovers. That's her entire job, and she does it extremely well. She's not a communications major; she's a supply chain management major, which is all like it's all logistics focused, right? Like, how do we get something done in the most productive way possible? And she has been absolutely incredible in this position. So, going back a number of years, it's just been really cool to see students like her come in and take a project and really run with it and do some incredible stuff. So our social media students are awesome. But overall, in our office, we actually employ 25 to 30 students just in our university communications office, and that's for, photo, video, media relations, internal comms, and web development. So we've got a really good student base in a number of different areas that kind of chip in some different places. And it's a huge priority for BYU, thankfully. Student employment, they're really trying to give them a lot of opportunities, and they chip in a ton, in our office for sure.
How do you, so at UNC, we implemented kind of a similar model to yours, John, where our students are kind of like the focus group first, and then like the content and creators slash amplifiers like kind of second.
Right.
And we attracted a lot of students that were interested, but most of them were like communications majors, which like isn't surprising. But when you say that you have someone who's supply chain, that's like one of the last type of people that I would assume would be even like interested. Or how do you, you know, like how do you find these students that work for the job but aren't in marketing, communications, anything like that?
Yeah, so we've actually found those types of students through doing takeovers. So she did a takeover while she was at, actually, we have a BYU Jerusalem Center in Jerusalem, and she did a takeover from Jerusalem, which was really cool. And that was, you know, we found her for that because she was kind of a friend of someone in her office, and we're just looking at, you know, which BYU students are using Instagram really well and could tell a story really well in a takeover, just a day in the life sort of thing. So she did that takeover and did like an incredible job. Like we used that over and over in training purposes to kind of say, you know, be like this and do this. So when we had a position, so we added her to the street team after that. Basically, whenever you do a takeover well, you get an invite to the street team now.
That's
and
awesome.
So that's how we're finding students like that. So, and we're trying to find more diverse students studying different things. For us, we cannot find an engineering student. Our engineering program is so good, but we cannot find an engineering student who's good at social to do a takeover. So we've got some plans on that, but we've got a computer science student. We have a dietetics student, but yeah, it's kind of been word of mouth, and we'll kind of audition them out and then have them do a takeover first, and then from the takeover to the street team.
Yeah.
Hmm. One of my, the student that's the captain of the Boulevard team, she's the, she kind of coordinates everything, and she's an audio engineering major.
Huh.
So, yeah, you never know what to expect.
Yeah.
And I think we'll see that more and more going forward, right? As these students mm-hmm. are just such digital natives that mm-hmm. I think they understand that they can love social media, they can love communications, and that they can just be naturally good at that and
right.
take that into whatever field they want to now.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Becoming almost like just a form of communication that you should be literate in, almost like how email communication is now almost required. Well, it is required for anywhere you go.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
I was going to say, you did, because one of the first times I ever got the chance to, I'll say meet you, even though I was in the audience and you were presenting, so I don't know if that really counts because I was just there. But one of the first times that I got to know your work was through your, what I will call, famous Instagram story that took on basically a very, I think, a topic that not a lot of schools would say, yeah, we should put that on social media as per how we are all very risk averse. Mm-hmm. I know that's something you want to talk about because you have a new kind of topic out too. So
yeah.
If you want to give the brief version of that presentation.
Right. Yeah. It's really evolved. We actually have, we're presenting at a case district conference in a couple of weeks out here in California. And we're trying to figure out how to fit everything into one presentation, because we did that initial presentation at EduWeb and it was on one of those stories. And now we have three of them and we're trying to figure out how to package everything in. But yeah, that initial story was on, it was specifically on sexual assault resources available on campus. And it was a very long process to do that strategically and to do it well and to talk to the right audience in the right way at the right time. But I feel like we did a pretty good job with that. And, you know, sexual assault is obviously a huge issue on college campuses around the world. And it's one thing to just talk about it, but we felt like we had an opportunity to add a lot of value. Mm-hmm. We had some data points that led us to covering it in what we thought was a pretty effective way, in that we saw through our campus climate survey that first of all, students didn't know the best ways to help their friends who came to them and said, hey, I've been assaulted. And second of all, they wanted to help. Like there was a huge, there's an overwhelming need for students to help, and they wanted to help, but they just didn't know how. So basically we put this story together, and instead of talking to, you know, it would have been, I think the traditional way to look at it would be, okay, if you ever are assaulted, or if you've been assaulted, you know, listen to these resources. And then that's an easy place for a lot of people to tune out and say, okay, this doesn't apply to me. But for this story, we specifically addressed every BYU student and said, hey, you can be a resource. Like, you've got to be ready for that moment if and when a student comes to you and says, hey, I've been assaulted. And that's an incredibly emotionally difficult time for them, and physically, and everything. That's a crazy, crazy time of life. You can't afford to miss helping them. Like, you've got to know how to do it. So that was kind of the impetus for that first story, and it did go really well. We had some, the social listening from that was, I think, the most important part, where we really paid attention to the DMs that came in at the end. We actually had some reports through the DMs, and so we had our Title IX office and our victim advocate, or our survivor advocate, there ready to answer questions and take reports. And it was just an incredible experience to do that. And so then a few months after that, we did a follow-up just solely on the topic of consent. So basically saying, you know, there's the story about the resources. Now let's talk about a way that we can actually prevent assault from happening. And that's by understanding consent a lot better for all of us. Again, a touchy topic and a hard topic to hit the right way, but we felt like it went pretty well. And then just a couple weeks ago, we had a story on the topic of respect, which is a very broad topic, but we narrowed in on, you know, racism, homophobia, sexism, a lot of different things. We talked about, you know, online hate and kind of cyberbullying, not specifically, but in more general terms. Then we closed by saying, okay, you can disagree with someone and still be respectful, which we felt like is really, really important in our current climate of outrage on social media and in person, that idea of being respectful despite disagreements. So we actually had the president of the university on that story, and he was incredibly supportive. But yeah, those are kind of our big three, those topics that are, you're kind of afraid to touch, but you know are so important to your campus culture. Mm-hmm. And thankfully here at BYU, we've had a lot of great backing from the administration, and they've been very supportive and helpful in the process.
That's just, it's so amazing.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an important topic.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's really important, and it's just one of those things. Like, I leave the office after days where those stories run, and I think like you just have a very gratifying feeling that like you're doing something really important. And I mean, you get that through different ways day in and day out, but on these types of stories, there's definitely something pretty special about it. And one of the really interesting parts about choosing Instagram stories as a mechanism, obviously that's where our students are, and so that was a big driving force for why we put this content there. We knew that this is our best place to speak to them right now. But there's been some interesting positives from us choosing to put it there that I'd like to say we were methodical about doing this for this reason, but really it's been a pleasant surprise. And that's the authenticity and the vulnerability that we're seeing through the direct messages from the stories. So we try to end each of these stories with a call to action. With the sexual assault story and the consent story, we specifically said, you know, let us know your questions on this topic, and we've got our experts who we used for the story here, they can help answer these. But for this respect story, we really wondered what to do at the end, because it didn't feel like just give us your questions was quite good enough. So we decided to go with share with us a lesson you've learned about respect in your own life that's important to you. And we just got these incredibly meaningful and insightful conversation started there. So the DMs have just been incredible, because there is no, you know, it's your only opportunity to interact with one of these stories is through the DMs. You don't have a retweet button. You don't have this public facing comment section there that we have to worry about trolls coming in and, hijacking what you're trying to say or attacking your vulnerability. But instead, we see this authenticity there, which is incredible, and start these really, really cool discussions. So, yeah, just incredibly rewarding to be able to see that type of feedback and conversation start.
That's a really good point that you make about the DMs and things like that, because I feel like while you can get more like eyeballs on a Facebook post or a Facebook video or something like that, just because of its reach generally and the number of users, it's so much more likely that the conversation can turn into a bad, bad place.
Yeah, we've seen that with Facebook especially, where we've had some huge wins over the years and still get a win here and there even with some declining reach. But we've seen this incrementally over the years, is that we have fewer and fewer positive comments in our comment section, but we have more and more shares. So people are
Interesting.
willing to like share our content so they can control the conversation on their own Facebook feed with people they know, but
Yeah.
they're way more hesitant to come in on the public comment thread and defend, anything that we're saying from trolls, because they don't want it. They just realize here in, 2019, you're not gonna win over a troll, and it's never worth entering that conversation. So yeah, a huge decline in the quality of conversation on Facebook for us especially. So it's been refreshing to be able to see something much more positive happened through Instagram, even though, like you said, we're not getting the vanity eyeballs. We're not getting, we're not leveraging public facing comments in the same way we could on other platforms in the past. But one to one, interpersonally, we're seeing some really cool things.
Yeah. I don't think you're going to get that. I mean, you're not going to get the people aren't going to tell you what they learned, and they're not going to ask you questions necessarily about how assault is handled on campus or the resources available in a public forum anyway.
Right.
Right.
It's so interesting you're seeing more negative comments and more shares. That's an interesting trend.
Yeah, I've
Nice.
tried to like see if that's research that anyone's done or if that's a trend for others as well. But really, I mean, we haven't kept hard data on it, but anecdotally, we've definitely seen a bit of a shift there.
Well, we can go research that now because I think we have to wrap up. I got the little ping from Logan that that's all the time that we have this week, and I'm very sad because there's so much more to talk about on these topics.
Right.
We'll have to have a part two, but John, we really, really appreciate having you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
It's great talking to you.
Hope to...
Yeah, and we're glad we could have a little cameo too. Special bonus guest.
There you go. Special 3-year-old Lily making her podcasting debut.
Love it. We had her first. So, listeners, thank you so much for sticking around. You can head over to our website, higher-ed.social. You can get links to all the stuff we talked about today, including, I think I can say this to John, those Instagram stories. I can link to that, right? Publicly?
Yep, we have them
Sweet.
all on IGTV right now. I know many of us struggle to know what to put on IGTV. We're just using it as a repository for a lot of our stuff right now, so you can see it all there.
Cool. Yeah. So we will definitely link to all of BYU's awesome social content, as well as ways to get in touch with John if you want to just say hey, or ask him more questions about the cool stuff he's doing over at BYU. You, of course, can subscribe to us pretty much anywhere you listen to podcasts. And if you use Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. It helps let us know what you like and what you don't like, but it also helps other people find the show. You can find us. We're on Twitter at HES Podcast. Send us a tweet. If you want to be on the show, do it. We want to talk to you. It's super, super fun. Thanks so much to Emma Hawes and Mariah Barksdale for being basically amazing and helping this show be awesome, too. Thanks to the Connect EDU Network. Higher Ed Social is a part of this network, which is the first podcast network for higher education. You can learn more on the website connectedu.network, and you can actually find some other great shows for pretty much anywhere you work on campus. And we'll see you all next week.